Let's go. Down the middle of the field. He's got through. 35, 30. One of the end zone punt. Logan intercepted. Touchdown, Giants.
Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. I am John Schmelk. Today we are joined by the one and only Paul Dottino talking some New York Giants football and the divisional playoffs coming up this weekend. Four good games. And Paul, this is my favorite football weekend of the year. You have usually what's the best eight teams left in football remaining. All good teams, all of good quarterbacks. No Ryan Lindley's running out there this week.
No.
And we should have four very good playoff games to enjoy.
And so many great storylines, John. I mean, you look at each one of these games, and every one has at least one headline and maybe a couple of subplots, too. But I love that. I mean, you don't always get that. But this time we did, where every single game has like this gripping, gripping storyline. And to me, my favorite one, believe it or not, is the Ravens-Patriots. I'm really into that game because nobody thinks that Tom Brady is going to lose a playoff game in his own building. But yet, two of the last three times the Ravens played them there, they beat them. And they lost the other game because they missed a field goal. So I think the Ravens are going to give them one heck of a time, and I wouldn't be shocked if they upset them. I don't think they're going to win. But I think they're going to give people a real surprise in how tough they fight.
Well, I want to go through these games one by one, and that's the early game on Saturday.
It
so
is.
I think it's a good place to start. And I hear what you're saying. And history does dictate the Ravens go in there and they play well. But to me, this is a very different Ravens team. And it's a very different Patriots team. This is the first time the Patriots, to me, have had a Super Bowl-caliber defense since maybe 2007.
Mm-hmm.
It's much better than even the team that played the Giants in 2011, in my opinion. And the Ravens, for the first time, don't have a running game to speak of. You know, Justin Forsett's okay. He's fine. But they don't have Ray Rice like they did a few years ago going up in New England that's going to go for 180 and dominate the ball for 35 carries. So I have a hard time seeing how Baltimore is going to move the ball on this Patriots defense. I really do. I don't see how they can do it. Don't you think the Patriots corners and secondary can shut down Torrey Smith and Steve Smith? I think they can.
Steve Smith is a pit bull.
He's a bulldog, but Darrell Revis is Darrell Revis.
I get that. I like what Flacco's done over the last month and a half.
He was mediocre all year this year, man. Mediocre.
He's gotten enough done where they've been on a pretty good roll outside of one really bad loss a couple weeks back. I think they've got some confidence going. They're a very tough team mentally and physically. They're a tough team.
And they're coached well.
They are coached very well. And quite frankly, going into Pittsburgh, and I get the fact that Pittsburgh is not a great, great team anymore.
Especially not on defense.
But having said that, they went into Heinz Field with a Ben Roethlisberger who threw for 4,900 yards this year and did what they had to do against an arch rival.
Missing their best offensive player.
Yeah. But nonetheless, gutted out and gritted out a win because I'm going to tell you, I picked Pittsburgh last week.
So did I.
Okay?
That's what I'm saying. I didn't think the Ravens were going to beat Pittsburgh, so why would I think they're going to beat the Patriots?
Because fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. I am now a believer in the Ravens. And I thought, by the way, the Ravens would give the Steelers a tough game. I did think that.
So did I.
But I didn't think they'd win.
Right.
I'm saying they're going to give the Patriots a tough game. They're not going to win, I don't think. But I'm going to give them credit for making this a compelling game that I think we're all going to want to watch into the fourth quarter. Can I say that?
Sure you can.
Okay.
But in the end, who are you picking?
Patriots.
So Patriots in a one-score close game.
Yes.
Okay. Late game. This to me is probably the least intriguing game of the week. The Panthers going to Seattle
to
take on the Seahawks. Now, a lot of people have been saying things like this, and quote-unquote, oh, the Panthers have won all these games in a row. They're one of the hottest teams in the playoffs. Hold on a second. Look at the teams the Panthers have beat. They haven't gone into some great playoff teams and won games on the road. They haven't beat great teams at home either. To me, last week, and this is what I said the other day to somebody talking to them, the Cardinals had the worst offensive game in the history of the NFL playoffs. They had 73 total yards.
Brutal.
Guess what? After a Cam Newton interception, inside his own 20, the Cardinals could have won that game in the third quarter. And they had the worst offensive game in the history of the sport in the playoffs.
They were
what
still
did that
in
tell
it.
You about the Panthers?
They were still in it. The Panthers were the sub 500 team to make the postseason this year. So let's not kid ourselves about who they are. And quite honestly, John, despite the fact that Cam Newton is big and strong and can run for some yardage, I don't dispute that. He misses too many easy throws.
Yes, and we saw a throw early in that game against St. Louis on that little skinny post near the end zone. It should have been an easy six. I think it was Greg Olsen. I'm not positive. I don't remember quite.
I think it was Olsen.
But he was wide open on a skinny post, a little 8 yard. This should be a pitch and catch, and he missed him.
I thought last weekend in that playoff game there were probably a half a dozen throws, not just one or two, but a half a dozen throws that he needed to make that any pro quarterback should be able to make, and he just was way off.
And frankly, I was surprised by it because I think he's made improvements in that area over the last couple of years, but I thought he played particularly poorly last week throwing the ball.
Yeah. And I don't know if that's because it was a playoff game. I don't know if that's because
the car accident, whatever.
He's still not feeling well. Although he came back after that and played
He played pretty
better.
Well against Atlanta.
He sure did. So I don't know if I'm willing to give Cam Newton any excuses. I just particularly don't believe when it comes down to throwing the ball, which is only one of the elements that a quarterback has to have. It's a big one, but it's only one of them. I'm not a big Cam Newton guy. He's got a gun of an arm. I mean, he can whip it as far as you want. He can throw it as hard as you want. But his accuracy is an issue for me. And despite the fact that the Panthers have a very hard-hitting defense, and a very good defense, by the way, and that's really kind of cool that you got the – and that's the one compelling storyline from this game, John, even though it's not a great game. Two smash-mouth defenses. That's the compelling storyline out of this game, is that these teams love to hit. That's great, but when push comes to shove, no, I just don't see the Panthers being able to function enough offensively to make this a good game. I just don't see it.
All right, let's go to Sunday then, the early game at 1 o'clock, and I think most people, aside from those that believe the Patriots and Ravens have your best chance at an upset, think the best chance of an upset this weekend comes when Dallas goes into Green Bay to take on the Packers. There's some question as to how how healthy Aaron Rodgers actually is. I think he'll throw the ball fine, but his mobility is probably going to be threatened here a bit. I've heard some people say this is a four-week injury. He is a partially torn calf, so he likes to scramble. That might be an issue. The Cowboys, though, don't have a great pass rush, so that could be an issue here where they might not be able to get to him anyway. But I think if the Cowboys play the way they have played this season on the road, where they run the football, control the clock, they have a decent shot here to keep Aaron Rodgers off the field and win a 30-27 type of game.
I don't disagree, John, which is why I don't think it's the best chance of an upset, because I think if Dallas squeaks this out, I don't think it's a huge upset.
Well,
Aaron Rodgers,
if you look at the odds, though, 6.5 points.
Is that what they're
saying? Yeah. So
that
would be considered an upset. I was surprised it was that high, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I have not looked at the Vegas numbers on this. To me, I truly believe that the weather's going to impact Dallas some. I really do. I'm sorry. I understand that
throwing the ball with Romo?
Yeah. Okay. I think it's an issue.
And you wonder, Dez Bryant, growing up in Texas, playing down there, will he be used to the cold?
We've seen him in like 10-degree weather with cutoffs and warm-ups. He's a bit. You know, he's Dez. He's on another level of humanity.
And you also figure Jason Witten's not going to be affected by the
Jason Witten will not. Come on. Jason Witten, he's walking straight to Canton. That's he's not going to be affected by that. But I do believe that Romo throwing the ball, and everybody knows I'm not a big Romo fan, but I do think that in these elements, this is an issue for him more so than it would be, obviously, for Aaron Rodgers.
Well, obviously, tougher to get a back loose when it's 8 degrees than when it's 50.
But Rodgers hurting. And what I've been told by medical people is that the freezing temperatures make that type of injury even worse for Rodgers.
Really, with the calf?
Yes.
Interesting. I have not heard that.
It's a negative impact on that type of injury. And so he will probably have more issues, being that this game is in the freezing cold of Lambeau Field, than if it were in Dallas, believe it or not. So to me, it's not a huge upset. I'm going to pick the Packers to win by a touchdown. I think probably a little closer than that, but it wouldn't shock me if Dallas were to somehow squeak it out.
And you think if they are going to win this game, Murray's got to go for $125?
No, there's no question. There's absolutely no.
And I agree.
You know what? Here's the thing, folks. You've been listening to us do these shows every day forever. Mid-season, I said Romo's going to get hurt. Murray's going to get hurt. Dallas will not make the playoffs because at least one of these guys is going to be out of the lineup.
And they got hurt, but they stay in the lineup and they played through it.
Yeah, so shame on me. You know,
you were right, though. They both got hurt.
Yeah, but part B didn't work out.
Well, you know, Romo missed the one game they lost, and then Murray played through the broken hand. Credit to him. Like, you know, you got to figure his agent's telling him, you're going to be a free agent. Prove to these other teams that you can stay in the game and stay healthy.
No question.
We'll see. Of course, now teams might say, well, you ran the ball 450 times. Dude, I don't want to give you any big money. He's going to be worn out. He's got no tread left on the tires.
Yeah, right. I can understand that, too. There's always going to be an excuse to give a guy less money. Remember that.
Do you think this game's – I think it's interesting. To me, if this game's played in a dome or in Dallas, you're looking at it, both teams probably maybe in the 30s in this game. In the cold, where do you think this game lands in terms of total points?
If you're going to ask me for a score, John, I'd say how about 23-20.
So you don't think these teams combine for more than 50, let's say?
I don't think so.
You think the cold keeps the score down?
I do think it has an impact.
Now, there's no precipitation, no wind here. It's really just supposed to be a little cold.
John, the ball in cold weather, you got troubles not only with the kicking game, you got troubles with the, as you said, passing game in terms of being able to throw it.
What was the final of the championship game? The Giants and Packers back in 07.
Gee, you know what? I'm drawing a blank, and I'm sorry, folks. I know this is humiliating for me, but I'm drawing a blank right now. I don't even remember.
23-20?
Yeah, it wasn't more than 45 points. It was not more than 45 points. I don't even remember. But here's my point. I've been told that in this type of weather, sub-20-degree weather.
23-20, I was right.
It was, okay. Go. The ball.
I'm proud of myself for that.
You knew it had to be a three-point game because times kicked the field goal.
Yeah.
But here's what I wanted to tell you. What I've been told is that in the sub-20-degree weather, which obviously we're going to have in Green Bay.
Yeah, 8 degrees I think is the high.
Yeah.
Real balmy.
You could lose as much as 5 yards off a kick.
No, look, the special team is going to be affected.
So special teams is going to be, that's not going to be too cool because that's not going to work out so well. I worry about basically throwing ice cubes is what these guys, quarterbacks, are going to be dealing with because the ball is going to be really hard and slick.
Huh?
So they're throwing ice cubes down the field. Not necessarily great and easy to catch. There'll probably be 5 turnovers in the game between both teams.
Oh, okay. That's interesting.
You know? So that's
now remember, Aaron Rodgers is not turning over at
home. No. I'm not. How do you know Lacy's not going to put the ball on the ground?
No question. Or the guy in the kickoff for punts.
So I think you're going to lose points by virtue of those things.
All right. Final game of the weekend. Let's touch on that before we touch on, obviously, the news with the Giants and Perryfield. We've been talking about it for a couple days.
I
figured I'd lead with the playoff first here. And the late
game, NFL guys.
And the late game on Sunday is the second AFC game, Indianapolis at Denver. And here's my opinion on the Colts. I know a lot of people probably don't share it. To me, they're not a good football team. They have Andrew Luck, they have T.Y. Hilton, they have a couple good weapons on offense and wide receiver, and that pretty much carries the load for them. Their defense, to me, isn't strong. Their offensive line struggles, to say the least. And while Denver has had some problems and they've struggled and Payton hasn't looked the same, I think the bye week will certainly do him a lot of good. I think the Broncos win this game by a couple of scores. I don't think it's close in the second half.
Yeah, I like the Broncos to win also by double digits. The Colts are a top-heavy team, to use the term. And there's no doubt that defensively they're lacking a lot here too.
And on the O-line. And you know what? People talk about Peyton Manning. The Broncos' defense has been pretty good this year. They've been a pretty strong unit, especially getting after the quarterback with Von Miller and DeMarcus Ware.
DeMarcus Ware has come back for double-digit sacks, John.
I wonder if the Cowboys have some buyer's remorse on letting him go after a couple injury-riddled years.
That's a good question. Look, their salary cap is a big problem, and they got so many guys they got to pay now. It would have been pay now or pay later. One way or the other, they would have had problems with
that. And they decide to pay now, and now next year their cap looks a little bit better because he's not on it.
Exactly.
That's something they probably have to do with a couple other players on their team this year.
You know, you can never be short-sighted when you're dealing with salary cap issues.
Very true.
You can't be. But, yeah, I the compelling story because of the quarterbacks and Peyton playing the Colts, it's a compelling story. But I don't know that this is a great game. I agree with you.
I'm with you. All right, now let's get to the Giants, as we've talked about the last couple of days, but we haven't gotten Paul's opinion, so we'd love to get Paul's take on it. I know he's been very excited. I've talked to him on the phone. After the news broke, I got the first call from Dottino. He's yelling and screaming. He was all pumped up. Well, not pumped up, but he was all excited about the fact there was something to talk about and something happened.
Obviously, I need something
to talk
about,
nobody wants
folks.
To see. We both love Perry and Pete. They're two very good guys.
Oh,
no one
man.
Wants to see them go. And you can tell by Tom's quotes, he didn't want to see him go either. This was a deal where he's like, I don't want to make this call. I like both guys. I think they're good coaches. But for the betterment of the team, I think we need to make a change.
Let me just make one thing very clear to the fans, because I said this the other day with Joe and Evan on The Fan. And it's really something that you have to understand. I know it's hard if you're not around. These guys are not only great guys, Perry Fuel and Peter Ginta. They're really good football guys.
Yep. They work hard.
They work hard. They're loyal. They're everything you could possibly want in a coach, which is why it took Tom Coughlin well over a week to finally come to grips with whatever it was that the organization decided, hey, things need to be tweaked. What are we going to do? How are we going to tweak it? Tom, it's your coaching staff. So now you got to sort it out, and you got to come up with positives and negatives, and you got to figure out how we're going to move forward. This was not something you could do in one night or two nights or three nights. Tom Coughlin really had to deliberate over this. And that's why, I'll be honest with you, John, it surprised me when a lot of the mass media, and I saw this yesterday on The Fan, and I know some people on the message boards got very angry with me about it, but when the mass media last week had already
had... That's nothing new, by the way.
Yeah, I know. But they had definitive answers on, like, so-and-so's staying, so-and-so's going.
It's a joke.
How could you say that when Tom Coughlin, the head coach himself, yep, who was going to have to make the final call, took a week and a half to deliberate because this was so gut-wrenching for him
to figure out. And it's not like Tom's thinking about this and making these decisions before the season's
over.
You
know, he's trying to win games, John.
The media's got nothing better to do than to speculate. And I get it. The season was over. They're out of the playoffs. What else are you going to speculate about? I understand it. I get it. But Tom Coughlin is trying to win games. Jerry Reese is trying to find guys to sign the futures contracts to be on this team in the offseason and come to camp next year to find another gem to maybe help out this team in 2015. So you really don't start considering these things until after the year's over.
There's a time and a place for everything. And as I always told people during the season, John Mara, Jerry Reese, Tom Coughlin, they will all follow Wellington Mara's mantra of you wait till all the evidence is in. You don't make decisions when you're emotional or when you're in the middle of the process. You wait till it's over. So Tom Coughlin took a week and a half to decide everything that he had to decide in terms of making moves. And you know what, folks? For that, I applaud him, because nobody should make a knee-jerk decision when you're talking about things of this nature.
No, like
you should not.
Like John Mara said, that's why you don't make decisions after a game like you have against Jacksonville, where he wanted to fire everybody, including me and you and everybody else in this room.
And I think the maintenance people, too.
Yeah. Look, both of us walked by John Mara on that bus after that Jacksonville game. It looked like he was going to throw everybody off the bus into the river.
You know, it's funny because I'm Italian and very emotional, as you know.
Yeah.
And you guys know, too.
It's a little emotional. It's tad.
But I have a very good understanding from my father, by the way, who, while very energetic, not as energetic as me, but...
If you are.
Yeah, thank you. Can you feel it? The sparks coming through the screen? But I learned from my dad. And it was hard for me when I was younger. And the same thing like Wellington taught John. You really have to take a step back, take a deep breath, and survey all of the evidence.
Use this, not this.
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. Because it's too easy, much too easy, to let your emotions drive the boat. And that's not what you're getting paid for when you're in a position of power like head coach Tom Coughlin is in. You are not in a position where you can let your emotions make you be careless or prompt you to be careless. You have to go through every single piece of evidence, almost like a detective, and then come up with an answer. So, folks, that's the only thing I want to say about this. Perry Fuel is a good coach and a good man. Peter Ginn is a good coach and a good man. Both guys will probably get jobs very quickly.
Yes.
I mean, there are a lot of jobs open in this league right now. 6 head coaching jobs. I'm sure a ton more assistant jobs.
And you wonder, too, you know, we all were questioning why Peter Ginta, you know, why him? You know, the corners will hurt this year. And I think maybe one of the reasons, just thinking about it the last couple of days, Paul, maybe you want to give him a chance here to pick up with another coach as they're forming their staffs early in this process. Because once the Giants bring in a defensive coordinator, who knows how many of his own guys he's going to want to bring in. Remember last year, Ben McAdoo came in, and that's when they made the moves on the offensive staff.
Yes.
After that. So right. I'm not saying that's going to happen this year, but who knows in what direction they go at the defensive coordinator spot. There could be more shuffling still down the road.
Yeah, I think the interesting part for me with the Giants, and we know that the published reports are that Raheem Morris of the Redskins, it's been said that he is the first interview.
And, of course, we stress the Giants are not confirming this. We're not either. We're just mentioning the report.
That's what's been written.
Right.
It's been written that Morris is the first interview. The Redskins apparently gave permission, and he's the first guy to talk to as the D.C. Well, I'll tell you what. I don't know that he has a connection to anybody on this current staff. You know, so if, for example, a total outsider were to come in and become the coordinator, you really don't know what types of ideas he has, how well he will mesh with those guys,
right.
because I don't think he's got any past history with those guys. So there's a lot of stuff that could still happen here. I'm not saying the guys are going to be jettisoned, because I think Tom has decided, okay, these are going to be the people who are in the building. But I don't necessarily think everybody's going to be in the spots that they're in today.
Well, you look what happened last year. Kevin Gilbride got shuffled around. Sean Ryan got shuffled around. Things changed. And
that could still happen.
You never know.
And may I add just one thing before you go on to the next topic here, John? Mike Sullivan, I haven't had an opportunity to breach this. Mike Sullivan, who was originally a wide receivers coach with the Giants and then became the quarterback's coach afterwards, and he was actually Eli's quarterback's coach for 2 years, including the year that they won the Super Bowl. Okay, remember that. Then went to Tampa as the OC. The point I want to make about this is, Mike Sullivan, when he first took over the quarterback coach's job, that was something that was new to him. And he was growing into that job, much like, you know, any new coach would in a different position. But by year two, he had this down pat, and him and Eli fit like a glove. And I can only believe that him coming back here now, that Coach Langsdorf went to Nebraska, I can only believe that despite the fact that Mike Sullivan does not come from a West Coast system, his symmetry with Eli Manning, especially during that last Super Bowl season.
Well, he was there for Eli's best year of his career in 2011.
Yeah. His symmetry with Eli, I believe, makes that an outstanding hire. Because, look, Eli Manning was able to fix a lot of problems last season.
Remember this. I'll go back to 2010, and I had everyone coming to me after that 2010 season. Boy, Mike Sullivan can't coach quarterbacks. He's the reason I just had a bad year. Mike Sullivan stinks. Then the next year, they win the Super Bowl. He's the best year of his career. So
he learned it.
Yeah.
He learned.
Oh, of course.
Mike Sullivan, like anybody else, had a learning curve. And so he'll learn things about this West Coast system that he's got to learn because he's going to be in it now. But my point to you is just simply that Eli Manning – he's going to be the guy here,
and
we know that. You know what? He's going to get his extension. Again, no one upstairs is talking about this, but I would think he's going to get his extension at some point in time because Mike is here now. That's his guy, his guru, his guy who we went to the Super Bowl with. Those two guys are going to be together now for a few years.
Well, trust me, and everyone expressed pretty openly their
they'd like to tie Eli up
with Eli Manning in the press conferences last
week. John Mara said we think he's got many more good years left, and we can go back to the promised land with him.
All right, Paul, we've talked long enough. Let's get to the calls at 201-939-4513. Anything you want to talk about, Divisional Weekend, the Giants, anything else in the land of the NFL or the world of sports, 201-939-4513. Joe in Pennsylvania. Joe, you're up first, pal. What's going on, man?
Oh, hi, John. Hi, Paul, the wise old owl there.
Oh,
my God.
There you go. I tried to chime in yesterday on your 3-4 or 4-3, and I couldn't get through yesterday, John.
That's all right, Joe. Chime in right now.
I was going to say my main thing there probably to stick with the 4-3, but more important than that, I think, is getting an impact player. Where, you know what I mean, where it messes up the other offenses, and they have to plan like, you know what I mean, if you have a Sue up front, you got to double him or do something, or LT.
Well, Joe, someone that can go out there and make a play for you, and I think there are too many situations here where the team need to get off the field late this year, and nobody on the defense as an individual went above and beyond, above the X's and O's, like Beckham did on offense, to make a play on defense. So I agree, they need to find more of those type of guys to play defense next year. I'm on board 100%.
Right, I know Paul wants that offensive lineman too again, and I did. But do you think if there's another Beckham in the draft, that the Giants would really take a receiver or a running back or a tight end if he was ranked that high?
Oh no! Why would you do that?
I'm just saying, if you had another Beckham, Paul, would you do it?
I wouldn't. You know me better than that. There's no way I'm doing that.
I'm just saying, but look at what he did for the offense. You know what I mean? It make me think anyway, but whatever. That's all. But my question is, besides this here, do you think, because I'm worried about, do you think they're going to bring in a veteran to compete with Nassif for the second backup job, or is that his?
I think I'm not going to say it's his. I'm sure they'll bring in a third quarterback to compete for that backup spot. But I think Nassif showed enough in the late summer in the exhibition games that he's very comfortable being the backup quarterback.
He improved dramatically from year one to year two.
I agree.
Dramatically. Even though we only got to see him basically during training camp in the preseason, he was not the same guy in year two. He really looked like he had a grip on what was going on this past season. So I'd be surprised if somebody beat him out. But would they bring a third guy to camp? I mean, they already signed a futures guy, didn't they?
That's right. I think they did.
So,
that's a good point.
I mean, you know, you got to have another guy here to throw the ball, you know, during the spring workouts and during the summer camp. But I'd be surprised if Nassif got beaten out as the number two.
I would be too.
Yeah, I said, well, that's my only fear is that we have, you know, young guys everywhere in every position, and next year if they put in a running back or a lineman anywhere or a defensive back, all these guys will have experience. The only place we didn't have it is at quarterback, somebody to come in, you know what I mean? So that was my only fear. So, hey, Happy New Year's. I love this show, so thanks again.
Thank you, Joe. Appreciate it. And the first thing you brought up in that call, Paul, is a theoretical thing that I talked about yesterday. The theme of the show was, what, rather than talking about names, because the Giants don't announce who comes in an interview, so we don't like to talk about names in terms of guys that can get the job. So instead of going that route, I went the route of, what type of defense do you want the Giants to play? And I threw out a lot of variables, you know, a lot of bump and run man-to-man. Do you want to play a 4-3, or do you go through a transition to the 3-4, which usually will take a year to get the right guys in the right spots to do it? Do you think the guys on the roster can make that type of transition? And that was kind of the theoretical discussion we had yesterday.
You know, John, I'm going to kind of take this from a side angle.
Yeah.
Because JPP is a 4-3 defensive end.
Right.
He is not a 3-4 lineman.
Correct. To me, that's the guy you have trouble fitting. I think Hankins could be a nose, in my opinion. Kennard played a 3-4 rush position at USC. I don't know if DeMontre Moore could fill that role or not, because I'm not sure he can do the covering aspect of the position you would need for that type of stand-up spot.
But
McClain played a 3-4 inside linebacker in Baltimore.
Right.
Ayers played a 3-4 defensive end spot in Denver, though that's why he left Denver, because he didn't want to play the 3-4 defensive end spot. So those are the type of theoretical conversations we were having.
Yeah, I think if you believe that JPP is still one of your core guys and one of your franchise guys, you have to, you know, go – and again, this goes aside from the fact that the Giants clearly don't have a lot of depth at linebacker. But
correct, and that was the other major point I brought up too. I mean, you have to add a lot of linebackers here if you want to do something like that.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
But see, JPP, I've been telling people, and you know, John Mara pretty much hinted at it in his presser that when he said, "I think that I'll be surprised if JPP's not a Giant
franchise
in 2015."
Easy solution.
It's an easy one. It's an easy solution. You tag him, and he's here for 2015. And you know, if everybody wants to make it happen for longer, then they'll make it happen. But I think he's going to be here for 2015.
You could tag him for 2 years if you want.
You could. You certainly could. I mean, that's the way it works.
It's costly. It's going to cost you more than $25 million over 2 years, but you can do it.
Yeah. Yeah. So count on him being here. Well, if you're going to count on him being here, that kind of just makes you understand that you're going to be a 4-3 team, at least primarily. Now, that doesn't mean, okay, that in certain situations you can't go to a 3-4 look, or even I've seen some teams in the last half of the season, some teams occasionally in their sub-package were only going two down linemen.
And they stand
and they were standing
up.
Guys
yep,
up.
They do.
You know,
and
truthfully, that all came back from Rex Ryan when he was in Baltimore.
Yep.
You know, he had what they called the amoeba defense.
And he still uses that with the Jets, too.
Sure he does. Sure he does. And other teams have started to use that a little bit at times. So you could still do some of those things, but you basically, in your core beliefs, have to be a 4-3 guy, I think, if you're going to get this job.
201-939-4513. Steven, Staten Island. Steve, what's going on?
Hey, John, Paul, how are you? Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you as
you
well.
Too.
All right, Johnny, listen, you know what? You just said, you know, it's funny. I got to tell you, First off, I want to go on the record, and I want to let it be known I am the biggest Packer fan this side of Green Bay this Sunday, that's for sure. And as far as anything else is concerned, you know, you said earlier, you know, what kind of a defense do you want the Giants to be? And I got one word for you, okay? And I tell you, identity, all right? That defense needs an identity. You look at the offense, okay, there's no doubt it's an identity, bottom line. And as far as, you know, a defense, they need an identity. And, you know, what I'd like to see them be, and that's why I wouldn't have an issue with either Spags or, believe it or not, Pepper Johnson. Okay, because like I tell you, Johnny, I'm an old-school Giants fan, and I go back to the days when Ed D had teeth, all right? And that's what this defense has been lacking, all right? Teeth. And, you know, hopefully the organization makes the right move, and oh God, not Raheem Morris, really, please no. But, I mean, hopefully the organization makes the right move on this and gives this defense an identity, starting with the front four and starting with the back and ending with the back coverage. Because listen to me. JPP, I really believe next year this guy's going to come on like a house of fire. I really believe him out. This guy's going to come on like a house of fire. And, you know, with the supporting cast that he has around him, that let's be honest, they made some really good moves. You know, had some good games this year. There's no reason to think why, with a good defensive coordinator, okay, that's going to give them identity, you're already looking at a top 10 offense next year, bottom line. There's no reason why they couldn't be in the top 10 of defense. Am I putting all my eggs in one basket? I'm a Giants fan. Of course I'm going to keep positive. What do you think I'm going to tell you they're the worst?
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Paul.
Here's the interesting part about JPP. And you're right. He did have a really strong second half and played the run virtually the whole season very, very well.
Ironically, he was actually better against the run, I think, in the first half of the year than he was in the second half of the year. But he got better rushing the passer in the second half.
Now, the critics of JPP will say, well, look at the pass rush numbers he compiled against the weaker sisters of the league.
Yeah,
that's what the critics will tell you.
You play who you come up against. I mean,
no question.
People do that. It's the weaker the week. Listen, but that's on the schedule. That's bottom line.
Yes, yes.
Cut and dry.
Now, here's the interesting part about it, though. Okay? He had 77 tackles this year, which next to J.J. Watt was the highest tackle total of any defensive lineman in the NFL.
He was very active. No question.
J.J. Watt was number one. Absolutely. J.P.P. was number two. Okay?
Listen to me. Listen, hey, Paul, I don't mean to cut you off. This is what I'm going to tell you now, and I'm going to go on the record. You can mark this date in your calendar right now. I'm telling you right now, next year, whatever the numbers are this year, he has better numbers next year. Whether it's so-called inferior teams, subpar teams,
I wouldn't be surprised.
I'm telling you.
I wouldn't be surprised. But because the other two things I want to say to you, and I'll make it real quick because I know we got other people to get on the phone here. Real quickly, though, Jason told me if you saw the last postgame show that we did after the season finale, Jason said that he had gotten a bad stinger and went down his neck into his shoulder, and he had numbness in his arm the first half of the season. Yep. He was hurt against Detroit and never told the public.
Right. Though, in fairness, he did go down, it seemed like, once a game, flexing that shoulder. So you could tell something was bothering him.
Right.
Frankly, that's been an issue for a couple years now. He's had those off and on.
And
yeah, but he gets injured. It's no secret.
There's
no doubt.
It's not a great
the guy is often injured.
And here's the thing, though. He never used that as an excuse, and I thought played the run extremely well in the first half of the year, despite the fact that he was hurt much more than he let on. Mm-hmm. Clearly, though, it affected his pass rushing. There's no doubt about that. Numbness in your arm, that's going to affect your pass rushing.
Of course.
But he doesn't tell anybody about it, although John said you could tell something wasn't right. So he plays through that. Then he gets healthy, and now I know weaker sisters on the schedule. I get all of that. But by the time he got healthy, and then he started wearing an elbow brace, by the way. I mean, remember that. The last half of the season, he was wearing an elbow brace, and nobody talked about that. But all of a sudden now he becomes a dominant pass rusher again. Now, part of this is it was a contract year. Let's not kid ourselves. Guys tend to fight off injuries better when they're in their contract.
Well, we just mentioned it with DeMarco Murray in the hand, for example.
Okay?
So that's part of it. They're playing for the future. But listen, I got to ask you guys one question.
Go ahead.
And then I want to hang up and hear you answer. Please, I'm thinking me personally, it's going to be Pepper or Spags. And I would have no problem with either one of them.
All right.
You really think whoever takes over their Giant as the Giants defensive coordinator, can you tell me now, do you think going into next year you're going to see the one thing I told you about when I called identity? Thank you very much, gentlemen. Happy New Year. Thanks for taking my call. You guys are great.
Thank you, Steve.
Thank you. All right.
He got the Datino thumbs up. That's big.
Well, here's the thing. I just wanted to give the positives and the negatives in terms of the critics' side of it and the pro-JPP side of it. Because there's really – I understand both sides of
it. Look, Jerry Reese came out in his press conference 2 weeks ago and said, look, he needs more production the first half of the year. We didn't get it during that losing streak when we needed it. And those are all facts.
Because they would like to have more consistency in the sacks. There's no question. The pass rush – for whatever reason, and again, we talked about it, but they'd like to see from week 1 to week 16, JPP, you know, notching that sack column.
And quite frankly, he can't continue to make those same mistakes he makes in the read option.
No question.
Which happened fairly consistently during that stretch of games in the middle of the year.
I don't know.
You have to shore that up.
How that continued to repeat itself is just mind-boggling.
And it wasn't just him. It was Kiwanuka, too, and Robert Ayers, too. I mean, both sides, both end spots were a disaster in that regard. But that he's seen enough. He should be able to get that by now.
All right. Now, the thing, though, that the third point that I wanted to touch on based on the phone call, and he really left the call with this question, and that is about the identity. John, there's one thing that I know from all the years that I've been covering this team in the National Football League.
You got to stop the run to win?
No.
I thought that was going
to
be it.
You need to have a defense that can either use whatever term you want, dictate to the other team how the game is going to go, or if you prefer, and this was a Parcells phrase, impose your will on the other team.
How do you do that?
You do that with hard hitting. You do that with aggressiveness. You do that with gang tackling. You know, you don't have missed tackles. You don't give up big plays. You don't have busted coverages.
Well, Timmy Paul, you have to win up front.
You get, absolutely. You get after the quarterback. You intimidate and you force the quarterback and the offensive line to constantly be looking around when they come out of the huddle, to constantly second-guess themselves. Do we have everything blocked up? Do we know what we're going to do here? Because, we're moving our eyes because we're worried about what they're going to do.
Now, the problem is that if you don't execute that right, though, you could be like the Eagles this year who run that type of defense, and you have guys running all over the field, one of them with Bradley Fletcher, killing them on a weekly basis.
Well, because there's not enough talent in the back seven.
Correct.
Okay.
And you theoretically have the talent, at least at corner, right now, because you don't have any safeties under contract besides Burhey and Cooper Taylor, two young guys without a lot of experience. With Prince and DRC, you should have two cover corners that can cover man-to-man.
And to be fair, and again, I try to always be fair, folks. I haven't seen the Giants, even in the 2013 season when they finished eighth in the league in total defense.
Yeah, it was last year.
I have not seen the Giants defense inspire that type of feeling, that type of willpower, that type of dictation style of football on opposing offenses now in a while.
But, Paul,
it has been a while, to be fair.
But to me, in order to do that, is that really about scheme? Or is that having dominant players out there imposing their
will? Both.
It's both.
It's both. Because you can't run the kinds of schemes that can do those things to another
without
team.
The right type of players.
Without the right type of players.
That's
you got to have both. You have to. And if you have terrific players, okay, you go back to what happened when Ray Handley was here. Ray Handley took over the Giants in 91 after Parcells had won his second Super Bowl. He had basically the same core team for 2 years, and he couldn't win worth a damn. And I'm not telling you things that you guys don't know. Ray Handley took that Giants team, and they underachieved big time. And it wasn't that they didn't have players, John. It's both. You've got to be able to philosophically scheme it, but you have to be able to have quality players who can execute the specific areas of that scheme to make it effective enough to where it alters the offense's mentality when they look at you on the other side of the ball. You must be able to impose your will on them, dictate to them, how is this game going to go? John, when you do that, you know you are a contender. You know it.
I feel you're imposing your will on me right now.
I'm sorry.
I feel a little intimidated. I'm not going to lie. 201-939-4513. Alex in Georgia. Alex, what's going on, pal?
Hey, how you, John? How you doing, Paul?
Hi, Alex.
Listen, I'm so grateful for you guys. It's a great show.
Thank you.
My day every day. I'm retired. I love the show.
Appreciate it.
Wonderful, wonderful. Listen, you guys were going exactly where I was thinking. I believe that Perry Fuel is a very, very good coach, but I think that he had to be released because because of defensive philosophy. I think, and I, you know, you guys know better than me, I believe that this bend and not break defense did not do exactly what Paul really is saying. That is dictating to the offensive team, you know, what precisely they have to respond to. And I do think, maybe I'm wrong, I do think that this is a clue to how the Giants organization is going to draft this year. Now, my question is this. Okay, assuming that that's the case, given yesterday's conversation, John, what type of defensive secondary, because they let Peter Jinta go, what type of defensive secondary are they going to need to dictate that kind of a game?
Well, I think they'll need to probably bring, I think they'll try to bring back Walter Thurman. That's just my opinion. He played here well when he was healthy. Since he missed the year with the injury, he's probably not going to cost a ton in the offseason, I wouldn't guess.
I would say he told me at the end of the year he wants to come back.
And there you go. He wants to be back. And again, I think, you know, until he got hurt, he was playing well. I think the Giants are pretty happy with him as a player. So, you know, I think Walter Thurman's a guy to look at. If you have guys that can cover in the secondary, and you can just ask Bill Belichick this. When he got Revis and he got Browner, with good safety play behind them, it'll freeze you up to do a lot of stuff up front that you maybe don't have the freedom to do otherwise. So if you have a guy you can trust in the back end at safety and a couple corners that can cover, Alex, I think you'll be in very good shape. And it's funny, you said, you know, the philosophy of bend but don't break. The problem with that is that this defense broke all too often. When you, like, are one of the worst teams in the league in giving up plays of 20-plus yards and giving up plays of 40-plus yards, that's breaking.
That's the reason why Perry Fuel really was released. It wasn't because he wasn't a very diligent coach or anything like that. It's just that that philosophy, I think they want to go in a different direction.
Alex, to me, two very simple reasons Perry Fuel got let go. The multitude of big plays that got allowed this year and the fact that the team couldn't stop the run. If those two things could have been fixed, I think Perry Field would still be the coach right now.
Yeah, Tom always says the top priority is stopping the run. And if you don't going to get that done, you know something's going to give.
Yeah.
I mean, because that is his top priority. I would also add one other thing to you, to your thought. And again, this is an apples and oranges thing. This is a philosophical thing. This is not necessarily right or wrong. It's just a preference.
Yeah.
If you're going to go with a team that relies heavily on turnovers because they'll give you the bend but don't break stuff and then say, well, we're going to get the big turnovers to kind of balance out.
Which is how the cover two is designed.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. That's where that comes from. And it's a philosophy that many people have executed over the years, and some teams have won with that philosophy.
Tampa Bay Buccaneers, for example.
It's happened.
Yes.
So I will not tell you that that's a wrong philosophy.
But you got to play it well.
You got to play it well. And once again, as with every scheme and every philosophy, you have to have certain components of players that fit that scheme and that philosophy. Now, based on when Perry Fuel got here, the way the Giants' defense was constructed and the talent that they had, they could play that philosophy well and execute it. They did during the 2011 Super Bowl season.
At least the second half of the year. They struggled a little bit the first half of the season.
But once they got everything down, they rode that philosophy with those players because it fit well to a championship.
Correct.
Okay. Now, over the course of the next several years, you know, Giants were decimated with injuries, okay? But to me, what I think, and this is me only, I'm not going to tell you what the front office is thinking, but I think I'd like to see the Giants' defense change philosophy and go back to the style I was talking about 5 minutes ago.
Yes.
I don't know that the bend but don't break, rely on turnover philosophy is the one that I would want to employ right now.
Because if you do play more press man, you're not going to get as many turnovers. That's just facts.
Yes.
You know? And again, this goes hand in hand with your personnel. So you have to determine, if you're Tom Coughlin, what are we looking for in terms of philosophically speaking, and then what kinds of players do we have or we expect to get that are going to fit that style that we're going to want to play? That's what's going on here.
The draft is really critical.
Oh, absolutely. So is free agency.
Yeah.
Giants have 18 unrestricted free agents, including JPP, which, again, I think he'll be franchised. That'll make the number 17. But they got guys they got to deal with here.
No question.
Yeah. Well, are they going to – I thought they weren't going to spend so much money on free agency.
Well, no. I think the comment that was made, John, correct me if I'm wrong, was that they did not indicate, Jerry and John Mara, that they were going to make big splashes to go out and get big money free agents.
And also not make the number of changes they made last year, bringing in the quantity of free agents because of the complete roster overall they had. Those are the two statements that I picked up on last week.
I think they're going to be more concerned with trying to retain as many of their own guys without making
As Jerry Reese said, you want to have a core, Alex, and then you build around that core. And if you turn everybody over each year, you're never going to have continuity. I think that was also part of the problem this year.
Well, then, of course, You don't believe that they're going to go to a 3-4 defense.
If I had to guess, and this is just going on my instincts and not any knowledge of the situation, no. My thought would be they would stick with a 4-3 defense.
Right. Okay. Well, thank you so much, guys. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you, Alex. And I think when you look at the defensive core, Paul, I think you're talking about, you know, JPP. You're talking about Jonathan Hankins. You're talking about now Devon Kennard. You're talking about Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie. And you're talking about Prince Amukamara. I think that's what you're looking at right now is five-year core. And Beeson as your core defensive guys.
Yeah.
You can throw Jameel McClay into that mix if you want to.
Yeah, I think you can.
Yeah.
In looking at the list of unrestricteds, okay, on defense, Roll, Thurmond, Jaquan Williams, Stevie Brown, Paisinger, Patterson, Shockey Brown,
Herzlick,
Demps, Bowman, and JPP. Those are your defensive unrestricteds.
And a lot more guys on defense than offense.
Okay. Without question.
Yeah.
On offense, there's only seven. And of the seven, Hynoski, look, folks, you put a value on them. Hynoski, Brewer, Jernigan, Jerry, Snyder, Fells, and Ogletree. You tell me which side of the ball the bigger names are on. It's not hard. The defensive side of the ball has more guys and more important guys on the unrestricted free agent list. And so, this is the time where Tom Coughlin and his staff have to figure out, again, what is the philosophy that they want to use going forward, and then what's the makeup of those guys?
And I think, to me, because of the two corners you have here, I think that dictates what you can do, and finding really good cover corners is certainly a good thing. All right, we got four calls, Paul. We got 13 minutes. Let's get them all in, all right?
Go.
Let's go to John and Manasquan next. John, what's going on?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
What's up, bud?
Just wanted to comment from what I'm reading lately. It seems like Spags and Pepper Johnson are the guys on the list for the Giants.
Fan favorites, I would say. The Giants haven't said anything, John. Fans have brought up those names. I just want to be clear on that.
Yeah. Well, maybe it's wishful thinking on my part, but Spags, you know what you're getting. You know, he did a great job for the Giants, and I think Pepper Johnson would be exciting because he would bring a Belichick Parcells type of feel to the defense.
Well, you know, I would only add one thing about the difference between Spags and Pepper Johnson. Spags has been a defensive coordinator for several years.
And a head coach.
And a head coach, and won as a DC.
Pepper, this would be the first time he's ever done it.
Pepper's never been a DC.
Correct.
Okay. Now, I do think that gives Spags certainly some advantages over Pepper. And Pepper has worked with both 3-4 and 4-3. He's done both.
Mm-hmm.
Spags is primarily a 4-3 guy.
Correct.
Okay. But in terms of defensive coordinator and or head coach experience, but basically the DC is what you want. The head coaching experience is irrelevant in this particular instance. But the DC experience that Spags brings to the table, I do think makes him a more attractive candidate. That doesn't say that I don't think Pepper's a good candidate, because I think he would be. But I do think that if you're the Giants, you heard John Mara at the podium.
Right.
They got to get it done this year.
And, of course, we do stress that both those coaches are under contract with other teams. So, obviously, keep that in mind moving forward.
No question. And I'm predicating this on the fact that the Giants would have to ask for permission and would get it. But
if they are, in fact, even interested, which we do not know.
We don't know that.
Correct.
So, but here's what I would say to you. If you believe what John Mara said at the podium about got to turn it around now, got to get back to the playoffs now, you would tend to think that the guy who's had DC experience would also have an edge.
Then again, they hired an offensive coordinator last year with no offensive coordinator experience.
But that difference was they were totally looking to blow up the offense, thinking that it was broken, and they needed to go in a totally different direction. They were looking for a dramatic change. I don't sense that here because I think that they got a defense that they think is going to be able to win.
All right, John, finish up.
Okay, thanks, guys.
All right. Appreciate it, man. I figured you had one more thing to say.
Can I make one more quick point?
Yeah, sure. Real quick, John.
Real quick. I'd like to roll Will Beatty as a backup offensive lineman and go out and get a stud left tackle.
No. Beatty will be your starting left tackle this year. John, thanks for the call. We appreciate it. I've gotten these calls the last 3 or 4 days, Paul. People want to cut Will Beatty. He had a good year last year. Pro Football Focus had him as a top five left tackle.
I don't understand it.
There are much bigger issues here than dealing with Will Beatty.
I don't understand it. I really don't. And by the way, he is signed through, and we won't go into the numbers because that's for capologists, but he's signed through the 2016 season. So understand if you were, and I am totally against this thought, to cut Will Beatty, it would crush your cap.
Isn't it
the
2017 season? Didn't he sign a 5-year contract? This is year.
I think what they did was they might have ripped up his final year and then signed him to a new one, which then gave him an extension. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I hear you.
My paperwork says he's through 2016.
201-939-4513. Fulton in Connecticut next. Fulton, what's up?
Hello?
Thank you for having me. Yes.
What's up, Fulton?
Thank you for having me. I am a little bit concerned about some of the statements that are made. For number one, they're talking about Farewell, and I'm going to throw in, Gilbright. I can't understand. I want to ask you a question first. What is the duty of the head coach? What does he do? What is his sole purpose?
He runs the football team. He manages and oversees every aspect of the team.
Well, who hires the coaches? Who picks the offensive coaches, the offensive defensive coaches?
Here, the head coach picks who his coaches are going to be.
Right.
So how can you scapegoat two coaches, even though I know that things weren't going right for these coaches? I understand that. But shouldn't that head coach go also? Also, how do you keep giving this coach a pass and getting rid of these coaches? Who this coach is managing and have a say in everything? But yet they keep giving him a pass and they're playing coaches.
So, Ernest, hold on. Fulton, hold on one second. Fulton, hold on one second. Don't you think the offense did a really good job last year with a new offensive coordinator? Do you never think that you should fire a coordinator then? Whenever you fire a coordinator, you should always fire the head coach?
Well, McAdoo, I'm giving him a – I should not say that. When I said all of them should go, I meant that Gilbright, Farewell, and Coughlin – those three should have been gone. Gilbright, McAdoo, you have to give him a pass because it's his first year.
No, though, but Fulton, my point, though, is that
–
point, if it was up to you, when they would have fired Gilbright last year, they should have fired Tom Coughlin as well.
Absolutely.
But why? Obviously, just changing the coordinator worked this year.
That worked, but then the defense –
thank you.
The defense is not working.
All right, let me ask you a question. How long have you been rooting for the team?
I'm 59. I've been doing it ever since I was, 10, 9.
All right, I'm going to help you out here.
All the way back with Ron Johnson. And
love him. Love Ron Johnson.
Alex Webster, Spinal.
Let me help you out here. Do you remember 1991, the year after Parcells won his second Super Bowl? And Ray Handley took over?
Yes.
Do you remember those 2 years that Ray Handley was in charge?
Yes.
What did you think of those teams? What did you think of Ray Handley, and what did you think of those teams?
I thought he was a terrible, terrible coach.
Okay. What did you see from those two teams, though?
Well, they had potential.
They had a lot of talent, but what did you see? You saw players who did not respect the coach, who did not play for the coach, who were all over the place because there was no semblance of order and discipline. It was an absolute disaster. Players who did not support the coach, players who did not believe in the system, you saw a disaster. Those are the reasons why you fire a head coach, and that's why Ray Handley was out of here in 2 years. None of those things that happened during the Ray Handley era were present during Tom Coughlin's season this past year. None of them. Which is why don't fire Tom Coughlin.
And that's exactly what John Mara said last week when he spoke to the media, Fulton, is that the players did not quit. They played hard the whole year. Now, did they play as well as everybody would like? Certainly not. No one's making that argument. When you go 6-10, it's 6-10. No one's saying that's good enough. Tom Coughlin's not saying it's good enough. And when Tom Coughlin let go of Perry Fuel earlier in the week, he said in his press release, this was not Perry Fuel and Peter Ginta's fault. this falls on me. I have overall responsibility for the team. So he's not trying to pass the buck here, but I'm going to go with what the owner said. And the Giants owner, co-owner, John Mara, said last week when he spoke to the media that he believes Tom Coughlin as his head coach gives this team the best chance of winning in the immediate future. I can't give you a better answer than that.
Okay, well, let me just say this.
Sure.
I think that the bottom line is the results. Last year we finished 7-9. This year we're finishing 10-6.
And
people are getting fired. I hear all the respect and everything else, but me as a fan, I want to see results. And if the results are not there, then that's what I'm basing my philosophy on. This guy should be gone. He should have been gone last year. Now, I just want to say something else. If they give you the Entrell role, I think he's one of the best players in the league. He doesn't get injured a lot. He didn't have the greatest season this year, but nobody has. I mean, as far as on defense and offense. So I really think that if they get rid of him, it would be a big. He's a leader and everything else. But
all right, we got more calls. We're gonna let you go.
We gotta run. Thank you for calling in, pal.
John, I'm gonna ask you a question that should help out this caller right
okay.
now. If you've got a beautiful 50-inch television set in your living room,
I do.
Okay, and
it's wonderful.
The reception is bad and it's staticky, and you're having a lot of trouble watching it. Do you change your provider? Maybe you go to a cable, or maybe you go to a satellite thing, or do you throw out the television? No, you don't throw out the television. Maybe you change the TV provider, much like you change the coordinator.
I just can't believe you're using a technological-based metaphor. I'm very impressed by
it. But it works. It works. You don't throw out the TV. No, you change to the dish or you change to the cable. You don't throw out the TV because the TV's working. The TV's good. That's not the problem.
Or the Fios, Verizon, a proud sponsor of the Giants.
Which I happen to have Fios, by the way, and love it. Love it. Go ahead.
There you go. Hey, look, that's all you can say. Look, folks, let me say this too. Ownership is not happy either. They want to see results. They really do. They are not happy with 7-9. They're not happy with 6-10. And, hey, Greg, do me a favor. Bring up the final cut we have there on the system. Go to cut number 107 for me. And, Fulton, maybe this will make you feel a little bit better. This is the final question from co-owner John Mara's press conference last
week. John, I know you don't like to deal in negative hypotheticals, but would you describe next year as a win-or-else proposition for a lot of people in this franchise?
I don't think that's an unfair statement.
There you go. So I think he feels the same way you do in terms of his frustration. He's just showing a little bit more patience with it.
Yeah. That's
fair?
Right. Absolutely.
201-939-4513. Paul's buddy David Rochester. What's going on, Dave? How are you?
Oh, Johnny, man. Happy New Year, brother.
Happy New Year.
Mr. Tarantino. I haven't talked to him in like a year.
Nice.
I just want to say you're looking great. I don't have a question. I just want to make sure Mr. Tarantino had a wonderful Christmas and a holiday.
You too.
I just want to see what you did for the holiday. Maybe did you slam some Zimas and call it a day? How was your holiday?
Thank you. You too. Actually, we're already starting college basketball. John and I got a lot of college games to do in the next couple of months. Unfortunately, no football playoffs to go to.
Now, have you been out there walking in the cold or no?
I did yesterday. I did one yesterday. I didn't do one today because there's too much stuff on the ground where I am. And people don't shovel or broom it off, so that gets nasty. But I was out there yesterday while it was still coming down and cold. Oh, yeah. Got to stay healthy, man.
Did you get any snow Nikes for Christmas, maybe? Them big web ones.
You know, Nike does make, actually, some very nice sneaker boots now that could work for you for your walks in the snow.
I didn't know about those.
Yeah, you have to look into that. They're a little pricey, but they're nice.
Okay.
All right, Maybe next year. All right, I love you guys.
Thanks, Dave. We love you too. All right, JD bye, in bye. South Carolina, he's going to finish off the show. JD, you got about 1.5 minutes. Go ahead, pal.
All right, thanks, John. Thanks, Pete. I'll make it quick. So we're talking about the defensive philosophy being, forcing turnovers whenever possible. And I just kind of wanted to throw something out there that I think is kind of important for people to consider.
Yeah.
There's turnovers and then there's takeaways. Takeaways, obviously, is getting your interceptions, getting your forced fumbles, essentially changing possession of the ball during a play. A three and out is still a turnover. So you are stopping the offense. You're getting the ball back for your team. And I think that's something that's really, really critical to consider when you're looking at defensive statistics, because honestly, I think turnovers are substantially overrated. They do play out numbers-wise as far as if you win the turnover battle, you're going to have this percentage of, you know, wins over the course of a season. But I think more importantly, it's more effective to have a defense that's getting those three and outs, and the turnovers will happen. If you're consistently playing, you're counteracting the offense, you're setting up yourself in good schemes, you're playing well, you're putting pressure on the quarterback, you're staying with your guys, you're following your assignments, you're doing what you're supposed to do, the turnovers will come.
And JD, you know what, generally speaking, I agree with you, and I think too, when you're facing another great quarterback like an Aaron Rodgers, or you know, in the division you got Tony Romo, you throw Andrew Luck, Peyton Manning, Tom Brady, whoever you want to talk about here, I do think for these defenses that rely on turnovers, I do think they struggle sometimes against the great quarterbacks, because in order to have a takeaway, you're still relying on somebody else to make a mistake in a lot of ways. You still
exactly.
need them
it's
to screw up in order to get it.
I would 100%. Only say this, if I can just chime in. The types of defenses that I talk about where you impose your will or you dictate to people, usually those defenses get a lot of three and outs.
No, and that's fair. No question.
So you're kind of on the same page with me there. You're just saying it in a different way, because that is a characteristic of an imposing defense.
Oh, yeah, 100%. And it kind of falls in line with the cover two philosophy. When you're playing that kind of defense, you're allowing the plays to happen in front of you because you're trying to take away the big play, so you're giving up more in front of you and then hoping that playing zone, having your eyes on the quarterback and being able to maybe be deceitful in your coverage is going to force turnovers.
Yeah, you're right.
And then that's going to make up for all the yardage that you're giving up and all the first downs you're giving up, because essentially you're getting the ball back.
The best one-game defensive game plan I've ever seen in my entire 32 years of covering this team in this league was Super Bowl 25. Giants, Bills, Bill Belichick under Bill Parcells shutting down Kelly and the K-gun attack the way that they did. Now, you will say, well, what about the yards per play that the Bills had? Okay, that's not relevant.
Yeah, you know, shutting down might not be the right word, but keeping them off the scoreboard.
Them.
Yeah, exactly,
controlling
right. That's the right word to use.
The way
that
they
I like.
Did it.
That I like.
And you know what? That was not cover two stuff.
No.
That was, we as a defense, we're coming after you, and we're going to make it difficult for you to do what you want to do.
Though, in fairness, they did play a lot of coverage in that game, made them run the football, make them take small chunks, and didn't allow the big play. So in a lot of ways, they did use a lot of that philosophy. They let the player catch the ball, then they made him pay for it with that big safety coming down.
Ask Andre Reed what Mark Collins did to him that night.
But what I'm saying, though, is that, boy, you can have big hitting safeties come up in coverage and make big hits
that.
That
is true.
Sure.
But the corners were incredibly aggressive.
Yes.
The linebackers and the front seven, they were trying to make life hard for Kelly, trying to make him get rid of it quick. Get rid of it short, because they didn't want him taking deep shots. They gave up one deep pass in that game.
Right.
It was beginning of the game.
Yeah,
when Perry Williams wound up getting burned down the sideline.
Thank
but
you, JD. We got to run, baby.
But that was
okay,
that was
thanks,
the
guys.
Best defensive coach game I've ever seen in my entire life. It was awesome.
Paul, final thought heading into the weekend.
Final thought is it's great stuff to watch the NFL playoffs. And you know the one thing, when you're not involved in the games personally, John, not as a beat guy, not covering the games, you can just sit back and enjoy NFL football. Without getting too emotional about it.
So hopefully, we'll see some emotion out of you this time next year. I think all Giants fans hope to see that. Everybody have a great weekend. Enjoy your football. For Paul Dottino, I'm John Schmelk. Have a fantastic weekend, everybody.
Well, here we go, here we go. Here we go. Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go, let's go.
Down the middle of the field. He's got through. 35, 30.